Unexpected.
Unpredictable.
Unpredictable.
Inspiring.
Fringe is universal.
Fringe is daring.
Wackadoodle.
Wild.
Really amazing.
Awesome.
Bear.
Camp.
Terrific chaos.
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 Community.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to the Minnesota Fringe Cast. I'm Rebecca Smith.
And I'm Brian Harmon.
And this is a countdown to the Minnesota Fringe Festival.
Shows open on Thursday, August 2nd, 2018.
So, mark your calendars, invite your friends. It's going to be an awesome 11 days of theater, dance, storytelling, and so much more.
In the meantime, let's get together for an inside look into one of the coolest performing arts festivals ever. A place where adventurous artists and adventurous audiences connect.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Rebecca.
So, I have a question.
Yeah.
What do you like about going to a live show?
The live show is a medium in and of itself. There are things that can only be expressed on a live stage that cannot be expressed in film, that cannot be expressed in poetry, that cannot be expressed in other ways. And that's the thing that turns me on most about live shows, is when I see somebody do something that you can't do in any other way. Sometimes that can be kind of ephemeral. Sometimes it can be emotional. Sometimes it kind of digs at you in some way. But it's very different than what I would see in other forms of art or entertainment.
Well, what we can do in theater is be more abstract or more poetic or just live, you know, truly just that physical presence.
There's just something magical about you're in that room and the lights go down or not, but the actors come out on the stage or the space, and it's just...
I'm opening myself to seeing what's happening next on stage. What's going on? Where's this going? Where's it going to go?
To me, it's just electric in the room, like what's going to happen?
There's always the chance for a surprise.
Even the cast is never going to be exactly the same from performance to performance. But that audience is such a wild card in the way that it interacts with the cast.
There's that audience reaction. I know I love a reaction from an audience. The laughter, the little gasps or little like ohs, you know, those little sounds, audible sounds that you hear an audience make sometimes.
It's palpable that they can sense a vibe coming off the audience. The fact that the audience is there, I think, is one of the things that makes live performance so special.
I've really noticed it when I've been doing this show for kids. You know, I've been doing Romeo and Juliet with high school students, and I know, because we do hear this, that there are some kids who've never seen a play, and then suddenly they're like, what is this? You know? Oh my gosh, this is happening in real time in front of me. I think that's incredibly eye-opening for them, and I think that they realize, oh, I really like that. I like that those performers can hear me laugh.
I want to see your face as I tell you this story. I want to hear your response. I want your response to modify what I do.
And I like that I'm affecting the mood in here and all of that. It's pretty powerful if you've never experienced it before.
I mean, it's unfortunate people don't have that exposure. It's part of life.
Whenever I try to boil down what the dramatic art is at its most fundamental level, I get back to my friend Charlie Bethel's work. He would do these epic adaptations of really old stories, Gilgamesh, Beowulf, and others. And his earliest work didn't have sound or lights or props or anything in it. It just had him and the audience, often surrounding him. Usually I saw him in a thrust or in the round type setting. And so he would just walk the stage and tell these epic stories and bring you into it. Often with the house lights even up, as I recall. What that does, why that is important, comes right down to this notion of, I am here, you are here, we are in this now.
The physical presence of other people telling stories to each other.
These are some of the oldest tools we have to connect with each other. The written word hasn't existed as long as talking has.
The collective experience of it, even for something like, say, the Oscars, you know, I don't want to watch that taped. Even if I'm in my home watching the Oscars, I like knowing that I'm watching it at the same time as other people. And for live performance, you just multiply that, you know, by many more times the power of the collective there.
The best gift we can give each other is the gift of our time. And audiences give it to the actors, actors give it to the audiences, and we've all made a compact at that moment to share that time together, to tell the story, to hear the story, to communicate something that helps us understand each other. And I think that's where that connection really builds from.
Someone might laugh hysterically two seats down from you, and you think, okay, that was kind of a charming line, but I didn't think it was hilarious. And it's just kind of delightful to see how different people respond. Your companion cries, and you realize that that's touching her, that's resonating with her in some way in her life experience.
That's as old as humanity itself.
In the older days, people can tell a story under the tree or something.
People have been telling stories to each other for eons, and that I think there's a real important reason why it still continues is because we're wired for that. We're wired to listen to others. We're wired to hear the human voice and pick it out from multiple sounds. And when we see it on a stage, it elevates the story from something that is just passive, where you might flip on TV and watch something, where you're an active participant.
Yes, the power of film and video and all of it is very powerful. We know that. But regular things become magical things on stage. You know, eating, a fight, kissing, you know, whatever. It's totally different when it's live and you're right there and it's happening. It just is. It's just a completely different experience.
And I think that element of being in the room with someone, of having them have a moment with you there, is a very powerful type of intimacy that is a guided intimacy, and it's got structures that both keep us safe and keep our expectations moving towards things. But I think that presence, that shared presence of audience and performer, is the crux of it.
That minute of connection with the audience, or something that's completely outside of my comfort zone and outside of my familiarity. And I guess I'm always looking for that. It's such a high when it happens.
That makes me skeptical of plays that are too polished, of plays that can exist without the audience present, of plays that feel a little like they're in their own bubble.
I like the informalness of the fringe. Just because that's how theater should be. That's how theater originally was. You know, the minstrel shows were done at the markets.
In a world where so much of the art and entertainment that we consume is so tweaked and polished and packaged and marketed, it's just something magical about seeing the spontaneity and knowing that you're seeing something that will never happen again in exactly that form.
The corporate stuff is all easy. And basically watching network TV, the content on there, most of it is pre-digested. We don't have to think a lick. A good example is the laugh track on sitcoms. 30 Rock had no laugh track, which made it a great show. And just like The Office, there was no laugh track. Like, you weren't forced to laugh because you hear the laughter. Watch an episode of Cheers or any of those sitcoms. I mean, they're great sitcoms from the 80s or earlier, but the laugh track catches you off guard.
And I'm not a big watcher of TV. I certainly have a TV and I enjoy it very much at times. It's not something I do a lot, but I do think there's something about everyone plugged into their headphones and watching an episode on their iPhone. And I took the light rail here for our conversation today, and you know, no one's looking at each other. Everyone's got their head in their phone, and don't get me wrong, I do that sometimes too, but it does seem like we're very isolated from each other sometimes, and about the experience of the minutia of living every day.
I'm not trying to solve any humanitarian crises or influence anybody. I'm trying to influence people to get out and see live music or get out and see live performance, because too many people are sitting at home watching Netflix all the time. Get out of the house.
Get out of our house and go. And theater is that. This is the time for theater. And And we're okay. We're okay.
I spent some time at the Twins game yesterday.
What brought you there?
Well, this conversation we've been having about what it's like to experience a live performance.
Yeah, there's some interesting parallels between the two, where everybody has a certain level of focus all on something similar. Theater does that. Sporting events do that.
Well, part of it is just the fun of being outdoors and having the energy of all the other people around you and everybody sharing the experience.
The experience of going out, you know, with your friends, you plan it, you do something about it. You know, you always have a beer or some food with it.
I'm not a big baseball person, but I like to go to the games just because it's more interactive, and there's just something about Minnesota and going to a Twins baseball game.
It becomes more than just watching the game at home, because when you watch it at home, you just sit on your couch and just... you can be lazy about it.
Get to see the stars in person rather than on TV. I mean, anybody can watch a game on TV, but...
it brings a more holistic experience, I'd say, to baseball.
Being there personally, you get to be part of the atmosphere, the live action.
It's more exciting.
You feel more part of the team, for our case, the Twins. You know, when you're out having a good time, they go, as a team, we're bringing that energy to the field, and I'm sure the players see that.
When you're sitting at home, you don't get the energy that's in the arena or the stadium. You don't feed off of each other like you do at a live game. At home, yeah, you can get into it, but it's not the same reaction you're going to get with people around you.
You see people doing the wave, you want to do the wave.
Well, one of the differences with sports as opposed to live music or theater, live theater, is that you get to be loud and with your friends when you're watching a ball game. You can talk and carry on and whoop it up and enjoy that.
They can persuade the players to, I guess, try harder, play their best.
It's conceivable that sometimes the players could get hyped by some of the activity of the fans, but generally, no. I think the fans are a separate entity from the game itself.
When they hear the crowd, they get into it more.
My only experience being a player is in like high school sports, but when I saw the crowd, you know, cheering me on, I felt motivated to perform on a higher level for them. Where
that's the great thing about sports is everybody has their own opinion.
Go Twins! You know, I feel like that does make an effect for them.
There's always moments from live games that you're going to remember forever. There's always a certain thing that you'll carry with you. That's why you always want to come back to another live game, is to hopefully capture another moment like that.
If you think about the stuff that we were talking about with the collective experience and the differences between a crowd and a collective experience, the flash mob business was a big deal several years ago, because what it did was try to turn crowds into collective experiences. So you'd walk in, you'd be in a situation that just looked like a crowd. And then people would try to do something to organize the energy in a way to make it a collective experience, which is why I think that stuff was quite popular for a while, because there was a novelty to doing that, to moving something instantaneously from just this crowd with all of these people with different purposes at a time where they're not expected to have a collective experience like that. And all of a sudden they do. Now, that can also happen naturally in other ways too. So attention was focused on one particular thing in one way or another. Sometimes it happens naturally. You know, you're stuck on an elevator together. Everybody's on the same bus for a while. Or
Paddleford riverboats. We do sightseeing cruises, and we've been doing a season pass for about 4 years now, and it's funny because we've seen people for the past 4 years that we know, and now we start to see them get to know each other, and it's kind of like they're becoming their own family as well as a part of our family down on the river. And so as well as like sports games, it also, I think, extends into small businesses, you know, where you get people who are returning customers and they become a part of that. We have one season pass lady who moved, and on her last ride, which was our last day of the season, we were sad about that. She was sad that she was leaving, and we let her know, you know, the minute you come back to the state, we're getting you on a boat ride, because she became a part of our family. And it's like, we notice when people are gone, we notice when they come back for the first time. It's our kind of extended family, like I said. We're right on Harriet Island.
So sometimes those sort of collective things start to happen naturally. But in performing arts, you can also cause them, which is what the flash mob does, which is what a good sports performance does. And of course, what a good performing arts piece can do as well.
And now, here's something for your calendar. Brian, what do you have?
If people are inclined to volunteer for the Fringe this year, if they sign up for shifts by June 1st, they have a chance to win a $50 gift certificate to Fringe Central, which is sort of the main gathering place during the festival that people go to after the day's festivities. And it can be a fun time, and to have $50 for that could be cool. And also being able to volunteer is cool.
Volunteering is an integral part to the festival. We literally cannot do this festival without volunteers. And I don't say that lightly. I hire about 35 front of house staff members every summer. And then we recruit and train and work with 300 volunteers. So without volunteers, we don't have a festival. There are lots of different ways to be a supporter of the arts. One is to be an artist. One is to patronize the arts, you know, purchase art, go see theater, purchase tickets. A third way is to volunteer and actually be a physical part of helping that art get off the ground. It's not a monetary transaction, but you are a vital part of helping the artist put on that show. Everyone who sees a show at Fringe interacts with a volunteer. So when you approach the venue to see your show, you're going to be greeted by a sidekick. This is one of our roles as a volunteer. That sidekick's going to give you a wooden seating token. Then you'll approach the box office. The box office is all run by volunteers. So if you need to purchase a pass or a show token for the festival this year, you'll do that through a volunteer. As you're going into the theater itself, you're going to hand over your seating token to an usher. So ushers, box officers, sidekicks are the main volunteer roles. You get a cool t-shirt, and there's lots of other fun perks and swag. For every shift that you volunteer for, you get a single show comp. So work a shift, you get to see a show for free. So our first volunteer training session is on Thursday, July 19th, and we have 6 or 7 different training dates and times for you to choose from. Ideally, we would love to have all of our volunteers signed up before the 19th of July. If you register and sign up before the 1st of June, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a $50 gift certificate to Fringe Central. And that's just a really cool bar and restaurant that we all go to during the festival. You will spend that money, I guarantee it. the earlier the better, especially if you are hoping to volunteer at a particular place on a particular day during the festival. There are popular places, there are popular times. So if you're looking to secure specific days and times and venue places, I would suggest signing up as soon as you can. You can visit minnesotafringe.org/volunteers, and that will take you to sort of a general info page about volunteering, what it is, what you're going to be doing, and there's a link on there that says register. So you'll just fill out that simple application, and then sign up for the shifts that you want. It's that simple.
Anything else, Brian?
Yes, we'd like to remind everybody that coming up on Monday, June 18th at 7 p.m. at the Surly Brewery is the next Drafts and Drafts event, which gives artists an opportunity to showcase their work and audiences a chance to give feedback. We went to the one in April, and it was a lot of fun.
Thanks. So this last one is for Emily Dickinson. She's the third one. And Emily Dickinson has always been fascinating to me as an artist because she wrote some of the most important poetry in American history, and she did so essentially in anonymity, with no one other than close friends and family reading her poetry. And as an extrovert, I wonder if I would actually be an artist without an audience. Early on in her career, she was actually discouraged from publishing by a mentor who did not realize what he was doing at the time, and didn't really understand everything that she'd already accomplished before he met her. But he told her, no, you probably shouldn't publish, it's probably not time, and she took it deeply personally. And so again, if we had staged this, this would happen right after a scene with him. And he's discouraged her from publishing and left. And she's now talking to her sister. She and her sister were really close. And she has an epiphany about why she makes art and whether she needs an audience or not. And this is Secret Beauty.
So drafts and drafts, as in like drafts of drafts, the like a work in progress, and then drafts, as in the beer.
That's correct. It's drafts and drafts. The drafts that they have at Surly, at their tap room, they actually make available beers that you don't see on the shelves or in restaurants elsewhere. So it's nice to also have an opportunity to sample some beers that you haven't necessarily tried other places. And I very much enjoyed that the last time we went.
And now for a challenge.
A challenge?
Yes, I have a challenge.
Oh, what's that?
Spend some time this week trying to be present with whatever it is that you're doing. There are specific things you can do to try to get there. And here are some ideas.
Yeah, I'm a very controlling person, very structured routine. Everything has to be a certain way, and that's why I always focus on what's coming up. I can never focus on the now, and I've tried meditating with like the Calm app where she's talking you through it. I am still like, what's going on right now? I should be at work, or I should be reading an email, or I should be looking at my phone or something like that. So, yeah, it's really hard for me to just sit and think, even when someone's telling me to do it.
We live, we're all busy. And oftentimes we're in our cars or we're at work and we're going from one thing to the next. So one of the things that I've tried as a parent, well, first as a person and second as a parent, is to find something that grounds us in the moment.
For me, it's exercise. Lifting weights. For some reason, when I do it, I'm able to check out of reality. It reduces stress.
It's nice to just kind of make a meal, and then after that, you get to eat and just relax. That's what I do after work a lot of the time. Yeah, just cooking a meal from scratch, you know, making pasta, getting fresh ingredients, putting them all together, different combinations, that sort of thing.
I've done a lot of walking. When I was in college, I did a lot of walking. I went to museums. I went places where I wasn't always looking for something that was fast-paced or exciting or rushed. So I found that when you go for a walk, you can be present with the weather, with your thoughts, with your pace.
Baking and biking. Because I work as a baker, and every time I'm in the bakery, I have to give my full attention to what I'm doing with the bread and the pastry in order for it to turn out well. And when I'm biking, if I don't pay attention, then I'm going to be hit by a car.
Even when I'm making art or like
doing like bookbinding or something that's like more meticulous, I feel like I'm planning on my schedule for the weekend and figuring out how I can fit in the rest of my work and, like, you know, like, where am I going to go next with this book? And then, you know, what's my next project after this? There's always something else that's I need to, like, be planning for.
To be present, I think, to track my screen time because, yeah, less screens, media. We just started it, so it's new. To me.
I'm a teacher, so when I'm teaching, that's definitely the case. I feel like I have to be present with myself in order to be present with the student and the subject in the room.
I actually spend a lot of time thinking about that, about being mindful and being present. There are physical activities that make the, what do they call it, monkey chatter or something, go out of my head, right? There are some rocks at a house we go to on the coast of Maine, and they're huge. They're the size of this couch. And as you jump and step from one to the other, you're so focused on, am I about to get stuck? If I jump here, what's next? Should I use my left foot or my right foot? I'm so focused on it that I don't have anything in my head. And the other one that my family teases me about, but I love, is chopping wood. Right? I mean, there's lots of proverbs about that. Chopping wood warms a man twice, right? And that's another thing that I'm so focused on. I grew up in a city, and so this chopping wood thing is, you know, outside my experience, but I love it, and I'm so focused on it that it makes the noise in my head go away. So there's focus and being present like that. There's also being present in really thinking about what you're doing, even when you're doing something that involves your mind, right? So the usual way of talking, I think, about a performance when you are present is the performance was gripping, right? The movie was so interesting that I forgot what time it was, right? That's when the show, the adventurous artists, have really got you, right? The show is great, and whatever your intentions were or how mindful you intended to be, there you are.
Whirlwind.
Creativity.
Really amazing.
Fringe is dangerous.
Daring.
Eclectic. Eclectic.
Fringe
fun.
Is eclectic.
Well, that's it for this episode, my dear.
Thanks to everyone who contributed to this episode.
Yeah, that was really nice of you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
And we look forward to more adventures soon.
If you want more Fringe in your life, go to the website at minnesotafringe.org to sign up for the newsletter. Take care.